The Briefing Desk, Geopolitics, the 13th of May, 2026. For the first time since August 2024, Russia ended a calendar month having lost more ground than it gained. April 2026 produced a net Ukrainian territorial gain of 116 square kilometers, a number that, in the context of a war measured in meters and months, carries considerable strategic weight. That reversal on the battlefield is happening alongside an equally significant deterioration inside Russia itself, where a first-quarter budget deficit has already exceeded the government's projection for the entire year. These are the coordinates of a conflict that, by nearly every measurable indicator, is shifting in ways Moscow did not anticipate. Let's begin where the numbers are clearest, on the ground in Ukraine. According to United 24 Media, April 2026 marked the first month, in over a year and a half, in which Russian forces recorded a net territorial loss. The Institute for the Study of War, known as the ISW, reported that Ukraine had liberated approximately 400 square kilometers of territory during the winter and early spring of 2026, including settlements in the western Zaporizhia region in late April. The net gain for April alone stands at 116 square kilometers. To understand why that figure matters, it helps to look at what Russian forces had to endure to produce the gains they made before it. The ISW documented that Russian forces required a 14-month campaign to seize the town of Turetsk, which fell in August 2025. Before that, it took them 41 months to take Siversk and a full 2 years to capture Pokrovsk in January 2026. In each case, the ISW assessed that Russia capitalized on none of the resulting gains, meaning the human and material cost was absorbed without translating into broader operational advantage. The only Russian advances recorded against what analysts are calling the Donetsk Fortress Belt were limited infiltrations in Kostyantynivka, beginning in October 2025, and those too failed to produce major ground movement. Against that backdrop, the Kyiv Independent reported in mid-April that President Putin had set an internal goal of taking the entire Donbas region by September 2026. That is approximately 4 months from the date of this briefing. Whether that timeline remains operationally credible is a question the next weeks will begin to answer. The human cost of the war, particularly on the Russian side, continues to accumulate at a pace that strains conventional description. Chuck Farr, a former U.S. Navy SEAL squadron leader and correspondent for the Kyiv Post, stated that Russia is losing approximately 360,000 personnel per year, a daily casualty rate of roughly 1/100, reaching as high as 2/200 in a single day. To contextualize that upper figure, Farr described it as equivalent to 2 full battalions every 24 hours. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky reported approximately 35,000 Russian soldiers killed or wounded in March 2026 alone, a figure the source material states was corroborated by Ukrainian drone operators, with similar numbers reported for April. Ukraine's deputy head of the presidential office, Pavlo Pilisa, offered perhaps the most striking unit of measurement in early April, stating that Russia was losing 316 soldiers per square kilometer gained in the Donetsk region. That is not a rate of advance. It is a rate of attrition expressed in human lives per unit of terrain. Cumulative Russian casualties since the invasion start are cited at over 1.34 million by Ukrainian sources, a figure not independently corroborated by a neutral body. Farr separately cited a figure of 1.3 million, placing it in historical terms, approximately 4 times total U.S. deaths in the Second World War across all theaters. He also attributed specific battle-level losses, including approximately 150,000 Russian personnel in the battle for Bakhmut and approximately 250,000 in the battle for Pokrovsk, the latter roughly equivalent to half of all U.S. deaths across the entirety of World War II. U.K. Defense Intelligence, as cited by Farr, though without a specific report or date attached, assessed that 95% of Russian military capacity is currently deployed in Ukraine. On the 8th of May, Ukrainian Commander-in-Chief Oleksandr Syrsky confirmed that Ukrainian soldiers remain active inside Russia's Kursk region. His statement was direct. Despite the constant pressure of the enemy, Ukrainian warriors continue to perform tasks on the territory of Russia. Ukraine stated the counter-invasion of Kursk cost Russia more than 63,000 soldiers to reverse, a figure attributed to Ukrainian sources only. Russia declared a ceasefire for its May 9th Victory Day observance. The ISW reported that operational tempo decreased during that window, but that fighting continued. Russia claimed Ukraine violated the ceasefire 8,970 times, a figure the ISW reported as broken down into 7,151 drone strikes, 1,173 artillery, mortar, and multiple launch rocket system attacks, and 12 ground assaults. Russia itself launched an airstrike involving an Iskander-M missile and 43 drones at approximately 6 in the evening on May 8th, with the ISW noting some uncertainty as to whether the strike extended past midnight into May 9th. On Victory Day itself, Ukrainian sources reported Russia lost 1,080 soldiers, 82 artillery systems, 1 tank, 3 armored vehicles, and over 370 vehicles and fuel trucks. The Victory Day parade in Moscow lasted 45 minutes, described as the shortest in recent years. The New Voice of Ukraine reported only 10 world leaders in attendance, compared to more than 20 in 2025. No senior allied leaders were present. North Korean soldiers were among those who paraded. Building on that last detail, the presence of North Korean troops in Moscow's ceremonial formations, it is worth examining what their involvement in the actual conflict has looked like. Fair stated that North Korean forces of approximately 10,000 troops were deployed in the Kursk Oblast area. One North Korean general was killed and another wounded. North Korean forces are reported to have suffered casualties of between 30% and 60%, an extraordinary attrition rate by any standard. The Kyiv Post cited Japanese news reporting placing Russian payments to North Korea for military assistance at between $6 billion and $30 billion over recent years. For context, that upper bound exceeds North Korea's entire annual GDP, which is estimated at approximately $18 billion. Regarding Iran's role in Russia's war effort, Fareh cited the Russian military blogger Rybar as reporting that Iranian assistance was a purely commercial transaction, and that Iran refused to provide offensive air systems. Russia's top drone procurement official was arrested for corruption after allegedly purchasing commercial Chinese drone technology rather than developing indigenous systems as originally contracted. The drone dimension of this conflict has become central enough that it warrants extended treatment on its own terms, because what is emerging in Ukraine may represent a fundamental shift in how wars are fought. On the 21st of April, the Russian state news agency TASS published a statement from an unnamed Russian security services source describing a Ukrainian unmanned aerial vehicle referred to as the Martian. The characterization was striking precisely because it came from the Russian side. The drone was described as nearly silent, difficult to locate with standard drone detection equipment, and capable of operating autonomously. Ivan Prikhodko, the Russian-installed mayor of Horlivka, stated that the system travels at cruising speeds of up to 300 kilometers per hour, is controlled by artificial intelligence, and is undetectable by electronic warfare systems. France 24 corroborated that the drone flies at low altitude and is silent until the moment of attack, both factors that limit the effectiveness of upward-pointing radar. The New York Times reported that an earlier iteration of the system, known as the Bumblebee, had been operational since at least early January 2025. In one document admission, it autonomously disabled a Russian logistics truck. In a subsequent mission, it autonomously struck a Russian armored vehicle equipped with electronic warfare systems. Russian forces recovered debris and sent it to the Center for Integrated Unmanned Solutions outside Moscow. That center renamed the system Marsianin, the Russian word for Martian, and its assessments concluded the system poses a serious threat, adding that there are no effective countermeasures and none are expected in the near future. The center also noted potential design links to NASA's Ingenuity Mars helicopter program, which conducted 72 autonomous and semi-autonomous flights between April 2021 and the program's conclusion. Forbes reported in January 2024 the existence of a drone development startup called White Stork, run by former Google chief executive Eric Schmidt. The company recruited personnel from Apple, SpaceX, Google, and former U.S. federal agencies, and is identified as the developer of the Martian system. Its technical characteristics include an electric motor weighing approximately 10 kilograms, GPS-free navigation through autonomous terrain scanning, AI-enabled electro-optical target detection, and encrypted data transmission resistant to Russian interception. At the institutional level, Danilo Tsvok, chief executive of Ukraine's Defense AI Center A1, stated on the 4th of May that Ukraine's AI deployment is oriented toward effectiveness and minimizing risk to Ukrainian soldiers, and that his organization works alongside the United Kingdom's government. Kirilo Budanov, head of Ukraine's presidential office, was unambiguous about the direction of travel. A transition to autonomous systems is required. These should be platforms capable of independently identifying targets and maneuvering without direct human control. The scale of Ukraine's drone industrial base reinforces those ambitions in concrete terms. The Kyiv Independent reported that Ukraine's drone sector is expected to manufacture 7 million drones in 2026, equating to approximately 19,000 per day. Some units cost as little as $500. The Ukraine Arms Monitor reported that Swarmer, a drone coordination software developer, has been used in more than 100,000 missions since its introduction in April 2024. Ukraine has over 200 companies developing AI-related drone technologies, more than 300 AI-related drone developments registered on its Brave One Defense Innovation Platform, and more than 70 AI-enabled systems currently deployed in the field. On May 9th, the Kyiv Post reported that Ukraine had developed an AI-powered turret through the Brave One cluster, now active across 10 battlefield units. Interesting Engineering reported on the same date that Ukraine is trialing an anti-drone laser weapon named the Trizub, with an engagement range of approximately 5 kilometers, successfully tested against targets as small as 18 centimeters across. More importantly, the ISW reported that Ukraine doubled the number of medium-range drone strikes, defined as beyond 20 kilometers, in April 2026 compared to March 2026. Ukraine's long-range drone campaign into Russian territory escalated from approximately 1,000 launches in August 2024 to approximately 7,000 in March 2026, targeting oil refineries and export infrastructure. FAR assessed Russia's total air defense capacity as degraded by between 20 and 50% since the war's start, with his own estimate at approximately 35%. He stated that approximately half of all Pantsir S-1 systems in existence at the start of the war have been destroyed. He further cited Russian military blogger Rybar as reporting that mechanized attacks using tanks and infantry fighting vehicles are, in that source's assessment, no longer a viable option. The pressures Russia faces at the front are being compounded by converging strains at home, across its security apparatus, its economy, and its industrial base. Beginning with internal security, CNN reported that the Kremlin has dramatically increased personal security measures around President Putin, including the installation of surveillance systems in the homes of close aides. A report from a European intelligence agency, obtained by CNN, attributed the measures to a series of assassinations of senior Russian military commanders and to fears of a coup originating within Putin's own inner circle. CNN's reporting identified former Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu as a focus of those internal concerns. The Kremlin has not publicly responded. On the economic dimension, the figures are stark. Ivan Yus, identified as chief consultant at the National Institute of Strategic Studies, stated on record that Russia's budget deficit in the first quarter of the current year reached 4.6 trillion rubles. The Russian government's own forecast was a deficit of 3.8 trillion rubles for the full year. In other words, by the end of March, the quarterly shortfall had already exceeded the annual projection by a significant margin. U.S. identified sanctions, military spending, and structural economic problems as the key pressuring factors, and raised uncertainty about the remaining capacity of Russia's National Welfare Fund, its sovereign wealth reserve, to continue covering deficit financing. At the business level, analysts forecast that up to 30% of small and medium-sized businesses in Russia may close by year-end. More than 400-500 shops have already closed in Moscow over the past year. The hardest-hit sectors are restaurants, construction, retail, and services. One documented case in the source material describes a retail business whose net profit fell from 5.1 million rubles in 2024 to 2.5 million rubles in 2025, a decline of approximately 51%, while its tax payments rose from 321,000 rubles to 3 million rubles, an increase of 835%. The business was subsequently liquidated. Restaurant chains Yakitoria and Shokoladnitsa are named as having reduced their Moscow presence. Experts cited in the source material predict that up to 10% of food establishments in Moscow may close during 2026. Industrial output is also contracting. According to discussion attributed to the Moscow Economic Forum, KAMAZ, Russia's largest truck manufacturer, is transitioning to a three-day working week. That shift is characterized as representing a 40% reduction in output relative to a standard five-day schedule. At the level of official economic discourse, Maxim Oreshkin, identified as deputy head of the presidential administration and former minister of economic development, publicly stated that Russia is moving toward a planned economy model, citing automation of management processes and the digitization of economic relations, including state-set taxi fares. Ivan U.S. characterized state planning as an inefficient model and noted pointedly that Russian authorities have adopted the phrase negative growth in place of the word decline. On communications, early 2026 brought a significant blow to Russian frontline coordination. SpaceX terminated Russian access to Starlink by implementing a whitelist that restricted the service to Ukraine's legitimate terminals. The Atlantic Council assessed that it will likely take Russia several years to recover the communications efficiency it had when using Starlink. Russia also implemented a block on the Telegram messaging application around the same time, compounding information degradation at the front. Infrastructure failures were separately reported from Krasnodar, including a 24-hour power outage and mobile internet restricted to daytime hours. Beyond Ukraine, a second front of American military engagement is shaping NATO's force posture in Europe. The transcript references an ongoing armed conflict between the United States and Israel against Iran, though no start date or casualty figures are provided in the source material. What is provided is an assessment from a commentator who characterized the strategic results as falling well short of stated objectives. The commentator noted that U.S. President Trump had claimed Iran possesses no navy and no air force, that those capabilities had been destroyed. But the commentator assessed, based on observable conditions, that Iran continues to control passage through a key maritime strait, retains enriched uranium, maintains its governing regime, and retains the ability to strike targets in the UAE. A figure identified only as Professor Robert P., with no institutional affiliation provided in the source material, was cited as having described the conflict as the biggest U.S. failure since the Vietnam War. The commentator declined to explicitly endorse that characterization, but noted that nearly all stated strategic objectives had not been achieved. The same commentator described a presidential declaration of a ceasefire as, in their words, fake, noting Iran had not agreed to its terms. The U.S. Navy has been conducting a blockade of Iranian ports, with U.S. Navy, Air Force, and Special Operations units postured for additional strikes if directed. China's role in this picture is worth noting. The commentator identified Beijing as the largest customer of oil from the Persian Gulf and described China as having provided Iran with limited intelligence and components. An upcoming meeting between President Trump and President Xi, described as occurring within days of the recording date, was identified as a potential venue for conflict-related discussions. The commentator also observed that China and Russia are both monitoring U.S. weapons expenditures, including Tomahawk missiles and Patriot systems. for intelligence purposes. The conflict with Iran has produced a direct consequence for NATO's posture in Europe. The U.S. Department of Defense announced plans to withdraw 5,000 troops from Germany. A commentator identified the unit as the Stryker Regiment, described as the only permanently stationed U.S. combat brigade in Germany, and assessed that its removal would represent a significant reduction in deterrent capability, including for U.S. power projection into Africa and the Middle East. The commentator assessed that the announcement was timed to signal displeasure with German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, who had publicly stated that the United States was being humiliated by Iran and lacked a strategy for the conflict. Some German commentators have themselves criticized Merz for the directness of those remarks, according to the transcript. The commentator noted that if the regiment were repositioned to Poland or Romania rather than returned to the United States or inactivated, the deterrent impact would be less severe, though basing infrastructure in those countries was described as not yet equivalent to the facilities available in Bavaria. Finally, a separate development from the Western Hemisphere. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio described sanctions imposed by the Trump administration against a Cuban entity identified as GISA, characterized as a holding company established by Cuban military generals that generates billions of dollars in revenue and controls significant economic activity within Cuba. Rubio stated that none of the revenue flows to the Cuban public in the form of infrastructure, food assistance, or public services, and that proceeds benefit a limited number of regime insiders. His framing was deliberate. That's not sanctions on the Cuban people, because the Cuban people don't benefit from GISA. Rubio noted the sanctions were imposed the day prior to the interview and indicated further actions are planned, without specifying their scope. In a separate interview with journalist Cheryl Atkinson, President Trump described Cuba as a failed country and indicated that Rubio, whose parents emigrated from Cuba, is leading the administration's engagement on the issue. No statement or response from Cuban government officials or from GISA is present in the source material. Drawing together the threads of this briefing, the battlefield in Ukraine has, for the first time in over a year, produced a net Russian loss. That reversal is occurring as Russia's military is absorbing unsustainable casualties, its economy is overshooting its own deficit projections, and its communications infrastructure is degrading. Ukraine, meanwhile, is scaling an autonomous drone program that its adversaries' own analysts have assessed as presenting threats with no known countermeasures. Elsewhere, an unresolved conflict with Iran is reshaping American force posture in Europe, and new economic pressure is being applied to the Cuban regime through targeted financial sanctions. The pace of change across all four of these theaters is high, and the direction of that change is consequential. Thank you for listening. That's your geopolitics briefing for today from the briefing desk. We'll be back tomorrow with the next update. We'll see you then.